Hey kids, this is Aaron from the podcast That Wouldn't Die, and Kevin and I use Zencastr. You think you're better than us, that you're using something else? You're wrong. Zencastr's the place to be. Who are you to deny it?
It's now super easy to record a podcast with Zencastr. Log in using your browser and start recording a high-quality podcast right away. Record studio-quality sound and up to 4K video with your guests. Feel a sense of zen knowing Zencastr's multi-layered backups ensure you always have your recordings in the highest quality, even if the connection is unstable. If you thought about podcasting before and realized that you need a lot of different tools and services, those days are over. With Zencastr's all-in-one podcasting platform, you can create your podcast all in one place and distribute to Spotify, Apple, and other major destinations. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use our code DIEHARD and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. We want you to have the same experiences we do for all our podcasting and content needs. It's time for you to share your story.
Only a fool would give up a chance for a 30% discount.
Welcome to Movies for Days, your non-pretentious, easy access movie chat podcast. These are the words that begin every episode of Movies for Days right here at the Movies for Days Network, your weekly deep dive into a different film of any genre from any decade with anybody's guess as to how we chose that movie that week. Available now on Spotify, Anchor, Podcast Addict, Audible, CastBox, Google Podcasts, and basically anywhere else podcasts can be heard. So if you're looking for a little less pretentiousness and a little more movie chat to your podcast, look no further than Movies for Days. That's movies as it is, four like the number four, days spelled with a Z. Movies for Days. Check us out on Twitter at Movies Days. Movies is spelled regular, days is spelled with a Z, because we're so cool like that.
A real magician tries to invent something new.
God.
It's something that other magicians will scratch their heads over.
I suppose you have such a trick.
Actually, I do. It's the one they're going to remember me for.
What happened?
It was the greatest magic trick I've ever seen.
Welcome to the latest episode of the podcast That Wouldn't Die. I'm your host, Kevin. With me, as always, is Aaron.
How do?
This week, we're going to be discussing the science fiction, period piece, magic. It's The Prestige magic. With Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman and Michael Caine and Scarlett Johansson, Rebecca Hall. It's really, David Bowie is in this thing, for goodness sake.
The man who fell to Earth and became Tesla.
Each week, he did. Each week we discuss guilty pleasures, forgotten classics of the horror and sci-fi genre with a comedic twist. And we have a very special guest. We have Ian from the Best Film Ever podcast. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Amped up to talk about the star-studded feature, Andy Serkis. You forgot him.
Oh, shit.
He doesn't have any friends. Yeah, it's The Prestige. I'm really excited. Thanks. Thanks, Kev. Thanks, Aaron, for having me on. Appreciate that.
Absolutely. You also forgot Michael Caine.
I said Michael Caine, Sir Michael. Absolutely.
I might have tuned out to what you were saying.
That wouldn't be the first time. Sad to say. Aaron, what's the latest? What's going on with you?
Dude, I am obsessed. I need to have a Nespresso machine. I was in San Francisco for a conference and my hotel had the Nespresso. It was just the basic one with like a shot or a lungo espresso. And it was so delicious. So I've spent the whole week looking on Facebook Marketplace, looking on OfferUp, and on eBay, because it is very important in my life to have an espresso machine. It was more important that the president was staying at my hotel. I am obsessed with an espresso machine.
I have a horrifying tale to tell. I'm not a big coffee drinker in general.
Yeah, so
much
I've
less
heard.
An
or
espresso.
Or a drinker in general. Or
I know, it's, yeah. It's diet. The life of a monk.
Yes.
And we were going I was taking my daughter to the Harry Styles concert a couple years ago.
That sounds horrifying right there.
as we talked about beforehand, I start falling asleep, you know, at about 8 o'clock. It's sad and embarrassing.
You're our father.
I'm ashamed.
You have narcolepsy.
So on the way to the concert, we stopped at Starbucks and I got an espresso. I'm like, I just got to do this. I got to stay up because we're driving all the way to LA and all the way back after the concert. And I spent half the concert in the bathroom.
It went right through you?
It was, we don't usually talk about this sort of stuff, Ian, but it made me think
about it. Kevin doesn't.
Aaron often. It was sad. I missed watermelon sugar. It was very upsetting to everybody. So
I think what's upsetting is you know Harry Styles songs. How about that?
I know that one.
Anything you'd like to share?
My Harry Styles discography isn't really. I could have named Watermelon Sugar at a push, but that would have been.
No.
Just about it. And that's the thing. Dare my accent betray me? I mean, I'm over here in the UK and I don't know the Harry Styles One Direction discography. So there we go.
I mean, I have to say, I do like That's What Makes You Beautiful by One Direction. In my mind, it's kind of like an 80s throwback kind of song if you listen to it. That's what makes you beautiful. The rest of it I could give a damn about. Or the rest of
Although them. Kevin was deeply invested in boy bands of the 90s. Let's just put that out there so we all understand.
I mean, deeply invested? I don't know about deeply. Dude. I mean, there was some investment.
You can sing every B-side Backstreet Boy. Don't even lie to me.
Ian, we were on a podcast debating Backstreet Boys versus NSYNC. And okay. I think we can all agree Backstreet Boys are far superior.
Backstreet Boys are the boy band. NSYNC is a star-making project for Justin Timberlake.
Agreed.
Yeah. Agreed. Backstreet Boys is team first. Yeah, you got your star players. You got your star players, but it's still a team. NSYNC became Justin and friends.
Oh, no question. I mean, look, we stipulate. Timberlake, obviously, he's the one, right? He's mm-hmm. the top of the mountaintop.
He's
no
the
question.
Apex predator of that he's group.
No, exactly. 100%. Now, you gotta also understand, he was towing a few anchors there. He had a Joey Fatone he was dragging along with him. You know what I mean? There's no Fatone equivalent in the Backstreet Boys. That's all I'm saying. So, be that as it may.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron.
I can't even remember where I fell on that line. I think there were some NSYNC songs I liked maybe better. Versus
that's a
an entire, you know, review.
Absolutely.
Oh, maybe I should put my phone on silent.
We're a very professional situation. Absolutely.
Hey, every podcast has gotten Aaron, I've discovered.
So now we can discuss who we like better.
So, you know.
Aaron, do you want to give us your 30-second synopsis of The Prestige?
Couple assholes. Are competing in some kind of London, I don't know, some terrible part of London for fame and riches. And they all get what they get. The end.
Pretty much. Now,
magic.
Now, Aaron, do you remember when you first saw this film?
I believe I was staying in Santa Cruz with my friend Julian Sien, and I'd had a couple of drinks, and Sien made me watch this.
That's very specific.
He's like, have you not seen The Prestige? Let's watch it.
Now, Ian, you suggested this movie for us. Do you remember when you first saw it?
Oh, boy, do I. Are you listening closely? I was in the cinemas. As luck would have it, my sister recommended, she wanted to meet up and said, you want to see a film? And I thought, yep, that's better than actually having to do the bit where we talk to each other. So I thought, let's just stare at the same direction instead and classify that as a relationship. So
sounds reasonable.
I went and looked it up. And this in the old days when you couldn't just go to YouTube and type in Prestige trailer, and instead went to the website itself and looked at several trailers, which always look a lot better when they're surrounded by the promotional materials of the movie's website itself. I think since the move of trailers to YouTube, I don't think I've gone to a movie's proper website in a decade. I really don't.
Not since Blair Witch.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing driving us to these websites anymore. No. So I thought it was good and went in with really low expectations. And, you know, if you keep the expectations low, I mean, you know, the odds of you coming out with a satisfactory movie going experience are greatly enhanced. It's the same MO that we use for the podcast itself. If we can keep listeners' expectations low, they're probably going to be a little bit more happy with us coming out the other side.
Absolutely. I did not see this in the theater. I saw it a few years later. And what was interesting about this time is Hollywood, in all its infinite wisdom, released two magician movies about the same time. There was The Prestige, which no one knows the hell a prestige is until you see the movie.
Right.
And then there was The Illusionist with Edward Norton. Okay?
Which I can't even remember.
I saw it once.
Something
and
like
I don't remember
tree.
How I felt about it. Something like that, right? I think it was like a romance. There was like an
Jessica
evil...
Jessica Biel, Paul Giamatti.
Thank you. Paul,
well,
Paul Giamatti, yes.
Paul Giamatti.
Yeah. Yes.
The only reason why I know this so well is because Aaron's story reminds me of myself in that I think once you've watched The Prestige for the first time, you become almost evangelical in going, you have to see this movie. And the number of times I told people, you got to watch The Prestige, and then come back to work the next day and went, it was all right. And I'd go, hang on. Did your movie have Edward Norton in it? And they'd go, yeah. I'm like, you're because the prestige, I could imagine you coming back going, I hated it. I can imagine you coming back going, I loved it. I don't think you're coming back going, I really
you're
don't.
You're not ambivalent.
I think it's one of those movies that you're going, I didn't get it or wow, but not this. I'm like, it's gotta be Ed Norton. And yeah, the majority of people, it's happened more than once where they've seen The Illusionist instead, because it sounds more right. like a magician's movie, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Honestly, I don't think I saw it in the theater because it sounded kind of douchey. So I just let it slip by. It wasn't until my friends whose opinions matter, because they have a similar taste to mine, that I watch it. Otherwise, I would have never seen it.
Right. I mean, love it or hate it, it's extraordinarily beautiful to look at. And it is very layered. There's a lot of shit going on.
You got to pay freaking attention. Yeah.
That's right. The thing. I mean, anybody who watches it, I'm like, you have to, because it's all on streaming now, you have to put that phone down. Because yeah. I think it's like there's a time jump every minute if you average it out. So I'm like, yes. If you're not paying attention, you will lose track. Even trying, you will lose track of where you are. The first 40 yes. minutes, you're going, I don't even know if I really got what the primary timeline is. Which one am I following? I have no clue. So you got to sort yeah. of pay attention to this narrative that's kind of going linearly, but at like four different points in time. And they'll jump yes. between them without really much help for the viewer as to what's occurring. So you've really – like he's warming us up for Tenet with this one.
Oh, God. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely, because this movie, like you said, it is literally three different timelines going on simultaneously. And it jumps back and forth. I'm over here. Now I'm over there. Yeah. Tenet, which I think I enjoyed it, but I think it gave me a headache as well.
I think it's the best way to put that. I think it's what we came up with. I think I got it.
Right.
Only kind of.
Absolutely. But I mean, like, literally every performance is dynamite. And there's that scene. I always think of that scene where Andy Serkis leads Hugh Jackman into that field and all the lights turn on and it's kind of like
fantastic,
dewy and it is. I mean, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It truly is. So just
this might be the birth of like the Nolan style. I mean, this is my first Nolan. I hadn't seen Memento. So my first one is The Prestige. I knew nothing about the guy. And if you want to kind of have like baby's first Nolan, I mean, you've got, you're going to have a narrative that we're going to chop and do all sorts of crazy stuff with.
Yes.
And we're also going to have these wonderful visual sort of moments that are going to be shot usually in glorious using IMAX cameras and the like. And you're going to get something visually impressive. The storyline's going to be all over the place. And it's going to be a little bit of a meta reflection on the art of storytelling itself. All those things are going to happen simultaneously here. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Did you
and
know
if you
this
don't
was
like this, then you probably shouldn't watch any other Nolan that's going to come forward, because it's the same things he keeps hitting.
Steer clear. Steer clear at that point. Did you know this was based upon a novel, a science fiction novel, originally? I did not know that.
I did know it. I haven't read it, which is nuts, because I'm such a, I'd say evangelist. Fanboy sounds a little bit too, you know, convention-y. But I'm such an evangelist for this film that you would have thought I might have actually tracked down the source material and given it a read. But I do know it took them 5 years to sort of, once they began the screenplay, to get to the end point. Now, granted, it's because, you know, Batman Begins and working and, you know, doing the press coverage for Memento all pop up and things like that. But still, it was sort of like a 5-year process getting it from the source material to what we actually end up with on the screen.
Right. Why don't we jump right in to the highlights? So, Aaron, what do you got first?
I just want to preface what I'm going to say going forward with, I like this movie. I like it a lot.
Did you see The Illusionist? Is that what you're trying to
tell us? I did not see The Illusionist.
No, she said she liked
it. I got a lot to say. With the first time I watched this, I was like, oh, Hugh Jackman's such an asshole. But the more I watch it, they're all assholes.
Absolutely.
100% assholes. How you let your twin brother treat your wife like crap while you sit there and watch it. F*** you all. F*** you all. How about that?
Yes.
You get what you get and you don't throw a fit.
Well, okay, we have to talk. I mean, we're just kind of jumping. We're jumping into the deep end.
Reveal.
So there's basically the trick that they're both attempting to do with various degrees of success called the transported man, where you walk through one door and pop out of a different door far away. Okay. Now, guys, you guys know we do spoilers aplenty on this. So if you have any interest in seeing this movie, too late at this point.
Yeah. I just revealed. Yes,
it's too late.
You might want to put that warning at the start. Yeah.
But it's revealed that Christian Bale always had a twin brother, and that's how he was able to do the transported man trick, basically. But he basically has to live his life as one person. You know, even those closest to him do not realize that he has a twin. And what's crazy about that is I kept saying, how about have the twin that's in love with Rebecca Hall just be her husband? You know what I mean? The other one doesn't have to show up there half the time and be
and have sex with her and have children with her. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Who's the father, right?
Yes.
Who's the father? We don't know. Anyway, so
they both do seem to care for the little girl. It's not like he's going, I don't care about my daughter. Yeah,
I don't care about her plot, but I do enjoy her child. So
do get themselves out of it by making sure it's the bad brother who hangs at the end.
Yes,
it's the good one who loved his wife who lives at the end.
Who lives?
A really rough ending if it went the other way around, wouldn't it?
That would be bad. Absolutely, because it. I think that's what they're saying. It's about kind of obsession. Right? He's fully obsessed to the point of like, because they talk about, it's kind of a reveal at the beginning when they meet the Chinese illusionist, where they basically say like, he's really not an old infirmed man. He has to live his life like that so that he's able to do these tricks and people are none the wiser.
But Christian Bale was already living that life.
Yes, he was.
He was already living that life.
Spot it. Right then, he instantly goes, I know what this is because I'm living it. Now, we don't know that. But a little side note, that sort of a Chinese magician is based on a real-life magician who was just like white American, but he presented himself as a Chinese magician for like decades on stage. And it wasn't until he was shot on stage with a bullet catch that he said, my God, I've been shot. It was his first English he'd said on stage in 2 decades.
I mean, that's dedication.
I love films that are about what is the cost of excellence. So you look at things like Whiplash, right? And obsession. Yes. What does it mean? If you can be the best, there's only one spot available to be the best, whether it's jazz drumming or being a magician, right? There's one guy who gets to be the best. And what is the price of that? And how far are you willing to go? Because you can live a normal life, that's fine, but you're never going to be that. So if you want to be that, or heck, if you want to watch Apple TV and watch Tom Brady go for 7 Super Bowls, what is the price of excellence? You know what I'm right. saying? And how far are you willing to push yourself? Because that's not a normal life then. So I love
it's sort not of a those normal narratives. Life. And once you achieve it, then what, you're happy now? No. Because now you've got to maintain it.
Now you're obsessed someone's going to take it away from you.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, it went from Hugh Jackman being upset that his wife got killed to, I don't give a shit about my wife.
He says that.
He says that.
I don't care He's about like, my
it's,
wife.
It's not about that at all.
Right.
My other problem with this, you got the twins, and they're already so committed to this lifestyle that they're living half lives, but not smart enough to figure out that their show's kind of boring and not theatrical. They couldn't figure that out.
Well, Scarlett
Johansson had to tell them.
See, I'm with you, Kev. I get this. It's the idea that they have all the talent in the world. They're the better magicians. But it's the difference between, you know, do you want to be a great actor? Do you want to be a great movie star? You know what I mean? The great right. actors who put out the great films that no one comes to watch versus right. the guys who put out pizza. And so it's got no real sort of artistic integrity, but you're packing out houses. Now, take that and go. You still want to provide for your family and you want the world to think you are the best. That's the hard part. He is the best. All the insiders would go, he is the best. But the average guy on the street doesn't know it.
Right. He's the magician's magician, basically right. what it is.
Yeah.
Right? And Hugh Jackman, as we all know, is the greatest showman. So, absolutely. So, I guess what it comes down to, because remember, Hugh Jackman sends Scarlett Johansson over there ostensibly to spy on him, but she delivers the showmanship. So, right. at that point, now suddenly he's got weird, crazy goatee and he's wearing a top hat and, you know, sneaks backstage. How does he keep sneaking backstage of Hugh Jackman's show constantly?
There's they no all security. Do it. Like nobody notices.
I would imagine there's so many plants that it's just the idea of going, you can't keep track of which ones are and which ones aren't. Now, why Michael Caine's not catching him, I don't know.
Right.
That's true. That's good.
And quite frankly, question. Michael Caine is not innocent in all this. He comes Caine? To his senses at the end, but he Michael facilitates Caine. This insanity.
Within two scenes, he goes from I'm going to nail a live man shot in basically yes. what's a coffin yes. to lecturing Angier going, obsession's a young man's game. I'm like, you just helped kidnap yeah. and bury someone alive. Your hands are not clean in all of this.
Right. No, he definitely kind of flips allegiances as the plot requires.
Yeah, exactly. Not in a normal way. It was like, now we need him to go help the other guys.
Is he our barometer of morality? Is he the guy who goes, when he turns on Angier, then we go, okay, now you really have gone too far?
I mean, that's what they're trying to say.
Because it's weird. The first time I watch it, and I always ask people this, I'm 100% with Hugh Jackman. I don't know what it is.
Right.
The thing that gets me is the I don't know which knot I tied. Going, well, there's two of you. You can ask. I don't know which one of you it was who tied it, but the one who tied it knows. So go right. ask right. the other one. Or at the very least, talk to each other and have an answer because someone's going to ask you that question.
That was a bullshit response because they know exactly who was there that day.
Yeah.
So one, we know. The audience knows what knot they used, that he used the bad one, right?
Well, we see him you know what it. The bad one looks like?
Well, he starts to do one knot, and then the girl kind of nods to him.
He looks at him, yeah.
Piper Parabo. So then he stops and starts doing something different. So.
Yeah, my reading's the same as yours.
So that's a bullshit response. We didn't have somebody died, but I didn't have a conversation with my brother at all.
Alfred number two, not Alfred number one, the one who doesn't do the knot. If he's the one at the funeral, are you telling me the topic of, hey, by the way, did you switch knots? That never came up, nor did you think to ask?
Yeah. Right. How about that Hugh Jackman wife dying? Strange, huh? What the hell?
I mean, would he come up like, yeah, I did. My bad.
My bad.
Yeah, I kind of blew it on that. Sorry, bro.
Sorry,
showing
bro.
Up to the funeral, interrupting.
Better luck next time.
I'm sorry for your loss. It's like, this feels more like an after ceremony thing.
Yeah. As they're pushing the coffin into the crypt, it's like, yeah. Hey, hey, time out. Let me just throw a few words in here, guys. If I may, pulling the microphone out of somebody's hand. Now, here's what I kept wondering. So that was what we're talking about is Hugh Jackman's wife is doing the kind of Harry Houdini, you know, I'm tied up in a, you know, in a vault of water. And can I get out, you know, before I drown, essentially.
Right.
When shit goes down and she's unable to release herself, clearly was that axe not tested? You know what I mean? It's like, why have the axe if we can't get through there anyway? So, just a question.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, she's the one escaping. And yes. She's getting basically just billed as like the sideshow card holder girl at the wrestling match. She's the one with the skill there.
Oh, she's doing everything. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
As the audience, I guess, I mean, I don't know, because I really do buy into Hugh Jackman good, Christian Bale bad for most of the movie. But I think the Piper Perabo thing where she nods and we get to see that, whether anybody else sees it, we get to see it where she and that version of Bale have made that agreement together and she's got agency in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the more interesting movie is if Hugh Jackman is the hero who then falls and goes too far. And then you find out the guy who you thought you hated at the end, you're rooting for at the end. I think that's a more interesting movie.
I mean, that's really what it is. They want you to think that he's the good guy who gets turned by his obsession. They want you to think
he's the audience surrogate. He's we never know Christian Bale. Even at the beginning, they say he's got a mysterious past and we don't know anything about him.
We're aligned to Jackman. We know what he knows, and only what he knows. Yeah.
Right.
Except for now, he has a secret too. Journals.
Right. I appreciate the long con of writing that journal. By the way, I'm gonna write this chapter, twin.
What does he do? He literally just steals his trick again. He goes, "Fine, you're gonna leave me there reading a journal that says you know, I'm wasting my time. I'm gonna write you one that says you're gonna die from my murder, and I'm alive." Stole your trick, did it better.
But I mean, and that's the thing. And, you know, when Michael Caine does switch allegiances, it's because Angier is basically like, I am condemning you to death. Right? You're going to die. Okay? And I could stop it, but I'm not going to.
Just don't feel like it.
I'm a
don't
dick.
Don't feel like it. I'm a dick.
Because I'm a dick. Now I'm the dick.
I'm going to orphan your child and, you know, fuck off.
The only way
I can succeed is if you're dead. That's the only way I can be the best.
Right. Well, he admits at the very end, you were always the better magician.
Yeah.
You were always the better magician, which is true.
The bit where he just, after being so obsessed with his method, he takes it, rips it. Now, it did feel a little inconsistent for everything I've seen him go through. That being said, it is quite a moment when he finally turns it over, like, what's he going to react to when he sees it? But that needs to happen so I don't find out I don't find out about the double bail.
Right.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this movie is each character really has an amazing story. You know what I mean? The fact that, you know, Christian Bale's whole double life with the twin reveal was amazing.
Yeah,
it was amazing. And then when it's revealed what's going on with Hugh Jackman's crazy trick, sweet Jesus. I mean,
it makes Hugh Jackman even more of a monster.
Okay, so let's talk about this. So in his desperation to recreate the trick, because Michael Caine tells him from the beginning, look, he's using a double. There's nothing else we could do. This is how I do it. This is how he's doing it. And Hugh Jackman's convinced it's some other explanation. And he said, Christian Bale sends him on a wild goose chase to Colorado to meet Nikola Tesla, who is doing...
But is it a wild goose chase? I mean,
it winds
how
up
very specific that says Tesla, and Tesla's able to create something.
Yes. They yell at that.
I mean, What are the did they have some information? Did they have some information?
I'll tell you what, it's lucky his cipher wasn't Rhode Island, because then totally different movie. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So Nikola Tesla, however many months later, creates out of whole cloth this machine, which is supposed to be like a transporting machine of some sort, but he actually creates a duplicating machine. That's the reveal. It's not, it's a duplicate.
It's Xerox. Xerox.
100%. 100%. And when, and this is what I was thinking this time, which had never occurred to me before. The first time Hugh Jackman duplicates himself, why doesn't he just say, oh, I don't need this machine anymore? I
was his first thought is murder. No, boom!
Because if you just, A, you don't need all the blind guys. You don't need to worry about all the...
Yes!
I guess you do got to convince one of you guys to, like, fall for his murder. If this is still the plan, you still got to decide which one of you guys are going to deal with that.
Yes.
But you can easily just have him waiting on the other side and then you're doing exactly what Bale's doing. Just make sure one of you are always in this other caricature and lays low.
It would never work because he's an asshole. So that means his twin is an asshole. And neither one of them listened to anyone. So he already knew.
Look, they dealt with...
Everything he wanted to do with Root, when Root, the body double, the actor. Yes. And he's like, well, maybe we could switch sides. You see, Bale's character gets to do that very thing. So they each get to share. But neither one of them are as obsessed with... And it's back to kind of the duality of these two magicians. Neither of the Bales seem to care about the applause. The Bales care about being the best, whereas for Angier, it's always about, you know, underneath the stage when he lifts his hands out. But then when he gets his dirty wish and he has been transported across the entire theater, and it's a majestic shot, you know, and he sort of stands up there on the balcony's what do you call it? Armrest or whatever, banister.
Yeah,
right.
With his arms stretched. It's such a glory shot, and he gets all the adulation, but it's been so perverted. I think that's the difference between the two men, and why I guess, you know, Kev's right in the sense that he would want it, I guess, all the time.
Right. He's not going to share it.
My other question is this just a 15-minute show at the end?
Well, he's still done some card tricks and shit. Right.
Not at the end.
No, at the end.
He loses all his.
They transported everybody. Get out.
Like, he's such a performer in that bit where he and Scarlett Johansson have hit their stride, and he's given her the rose and all that stuff, and they're playing. At the end, he's just seriously going, "I knew a woman who died doing this once. Should we get started?" And then it's just there's no humor now. He's like,
"No, you know,
in my travels, inside. I'm just like, what." But it's the idea of exclusivity, right? I mean, you know, if you only make 150,000 iPhones for the next generation, then the appeal becomes, you know, there's not many of them, 100 performances. And, exclusivity drives demand. And so what? He only does three tricks? He only does three tricks. That can be part of one trick. Yeah, that can be part of the sales pitch.
And I think it's 100 because I think they calculated the number of bodies they can hide in that theater.
Jesus Christ.
And then what? You're going to burn it down?
Because
he's not driven by money.
How do they know which one Borden's going to show up for? Because that's the one. Yeah. That's the one where you have to stop the performance. Or do you just keep doing it until you hear Borden shouting out one day?
You're right. You're right.
You just have to show up until the end of the performance. So it really could be any of the 100.
Yeah.
So what happens is when Hugh Jackman does a transported man, Nikola Tesla zaps him and makes a duplicate across the theater or something, right? The original drops down through a trap door into a water vault, the same one that his wife drowned in, and then just drowns. So
it's locked inside until it drowns.
And the plan was only to have 100 shows. I'm going to do 100 shows and that's it. So...
I'm gonna 100 times.
Yeah. Right. And I remember watching this thinking at the time that maybe there's some ambiguity, right? Maybe you are transported and your double is left behind, but I don't think there's any ambiguity. What do you guys think?
Ambiguity in what?
Like if he is actually transported or if he stays where he's at and drops in the thing.
Well, my reading is that every man who goes into the magic trick his experience is that he has been the lucky one 45 times in a row. But right. aware that this could be the time that he drops down, because everyone who drops down will because it's a trap. Oh, yeah. So he's transported. So then their experience is they carry all the memories and all of the personality and yes. all that stuff along with them. But his experience is he's gone in there and 45 times in a row, he's been transported. He doesn't because he hasn't had the experience. Because the guy who drops ain't there to tell his story at the end of it.
Right.
But you still have to have that fear every time of, what if this time my consciousness is the one that drops down?
I just assume whatever it is stays constant. So either
you're always dropping,
you're always dying, or always somebody else is dying. It's like Star Trek. Is it a copy of you or is it you?
Well, it's like all those science fiction movies. Like, did you ever see that Schwarzenegger movie, The Sixth Day? It's all about cloning. The reality is when you have a clone, it's not you. You know what I mean? If you die and they clone you, you're still dead. It's this just now there's a new clone. Person roaming right. around
this
with
your
memories.
This is a different kind of clone. This isn't like Dolly the Sheep. This is you have all your knowledge and all your information. This you're not going to think, oh shit, I'm the clone.
This would right. be a lot easier. Or sorry, this would be a lot more. This would be a lot more ambiguous, I think. If the hat disappeared and two hats appear at two different locations, then you argue which one's the authentic one and which one's the clone.
Right.
No, but they want case, it. They want it
the
to
one
be.
Drops,
yeah.
It has object permanence. The hat that the Tesla fires, it never leaves.
Right.
So as a result, that's always the original. So I guess the one that jumps must always be the clone, must always be the copy.
That's
but the
what
copy
I think.
Isn't. Oh, the copy will still. I imagine the copy's thinking too hard about it because you want to be able to sleep at night. Because that way, I guess every copy is the one that dies on the next attempt.
Yes.
Because we're making the copy of the copy of the copy because of object permanence.
Absolutely. Yes.
So Hugh Jackman's a sociopath and he just, these things do not trouble him so much. It's still worth it.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Either he's like totally cool with murdering essentially 100 of his clones, or he's willing to risk his, like literally
commit suicide every night.
Every night.
Drown.
To do this trick. That's obsession.
Whereas if he'd just done the first idea and gone, hey, why don't the two of us figure this out? And just, as Michael Caine might say, you use a bloody double. And you're both
use a bloody double.
And you're both invested in it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Keaton dealt with these issues in Duplicity. So if you really want to know, you guys never saw that movie? This is a deep pull.
No.
Where he's clones. Harold Ramis directed it. Anyway, that's a deep cut. Good times.
I love the movie. The movie poster's like 25 Michael Keatons
yes.
and one Andy McDowell, who cannot act.
Oh, wait a minute.
No, never could.
Did I call it Duplicity? It's Multiplicity.
Multiplicity
is a movie about bad relationships with Clive Owen, I think.
Nah.
Don't see that. That's a different
one. I see the poster. I knew what you were going for with that.
That's good when I fumble the joke and no one gets it anyway. Good yeah. times.
You know, the two main characters are never friends. They work together with that other magician, but you can tell they were always in competition. It wasn't
right.
like they were close friends and then the wife died. I mean, because together, if they had worked together, they could have been amazing.
They also try to imply some sort of class difference that Angier came from significant money, it looks like.
Yes.
Whereas Borden is American, ironically. And yet the and then Bale's character, Borden, he's London born and bred, and he's he's quite poor by comparison. So
yes.
it's
they even mentioned getting out of this. They have to succeed.
Yeah.
Well, and there's even a line that Hugh Jackman has where he's just like, well, you know, because his wife at the time tells him, it's like, well, you kind of are playing a role, aren't you? And he's like, well, you know, I'm using a different name because I promised my family I wouldn't embarrass them, blah, blah. So he kind of lets you know that even he's not who he's claiming to be at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
So did he have like a British accent, Hugh Jackman now, at the end of the movie when he's Lord Codlow? I don't remember. Because he's American the entire movie. I don't know. See?
I think he's got something when he's Lord Cordlow.
I thought he had an accent the whole time.
No, he was American the whole time.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. Which I wrote that down. It was like an interesting choice.
Yeah.
I would like to just put out there that I hate Hugh Jackman, except in Wolverine.
Why do you hate Hugh Jackman?
I don't know. It's irrational. But I don't like him.
Something else I've seen him besides irritating. This and X-Men that I actually do like him in.
See?
I wasn't the biggest fan of The Greatest Showman.
No.
No.
And I didn't either. Like him as Jean Valjean in Les Mis.
He
I was
can
like,
sing and dance?
Oh. I don't give a shit.
I liked him in Swordfish.
I've never seen Swordfish.
I don't even know what that is. You're just making words up
that's,
now.
No, that's John Travolta, Halle Berry.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. I mean, it's popcorn movie.
I mean, is he the best actor out of that bunch, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. That's interesting. I'm like, literally.
Oh, hang on. Prisoners. The guy's in Prisoners. The guy's great in Prisoners.
With Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal and what's his name from Little Miss Sunshine? The guy who doesn't talk. Paul Dano. Oh, it's such
haven't
a good film.
Haven't seen it.
Oh, Prisoners is such, it's a Denis Villeneuve film.
Yeah.
His daughter gets kidnapped and he's trying to figure out who's got them. And it's like, what limits will you go to and where is your check when it's something you care so much about? Oh, it's good.
I just tell you, his Wolverine is amazing. And I don't like superhero movies.
I mean, I'm sitting here going like, I mean, what else did he do? Was it literally just Kate and Leopold and shit like that for 15 years?
Yeah, I mean, his career is in, his background is in musical theater. So
yes.
Yeah,
he did a lot of that stuff first.
So interesting.
He did the one with the kids and the robots. And you train these robots.
Oh, Real Steel. Real Steel.
It's like remote control Transformers. Yeah.
Robot Jocks.
Yeah, Robot Jocks.
I wish he was a robot.
It's like the shows that come on after the cartoons. And it's like, just these nerdy guys fighting there. Hang on. He was in the Eddie the Eagle biopic. I don't know if it got any love over there.
Yes.
Oh, what was that called? But no, he was great in it.
Eddie the Eagle?
Eddie the Eagle,
the British ski jumper.
Skier.
Yeah. Oh. He was in that
Is
film.
He Eddie?
No, he's not Eddie. Taron Egerton, who played Elton John in Rocket Man, he's Eddie.
Oh my God, Rocket Man is one of my favorite movies.
Like Hugh
I love
Jackman's
that movie
coach.
So much.
Oh, it's great.
Sweet Jesus. I you know what? I didn't like The Greatest Showman, but generally speaking, I watch Hugh Jackman's performances and I approve. Generally speaking, I'm not like, well,
he's not bringing me to the theater.
This is funny.
Christian Bale is bringing me to the theater. Hugh Jackman, it's not an automatic.
It's interesting because I think art's imitating life here. Hugh Jackman is the big movie star at this time.
So yes.
He's the showman. He's not the artist. He is the showman, though. He's the guy. He's the pretty man with the winning smile who will get butts in seats, all that stuff. He's Wolverine, right? And then in Christian Bale, you've got a legit actor. But a legit actor who might not be box office. And so now we put the two of them in. What do we add? Let's add Scarlett Johansson, who I know you said everybody was really good in this, Kev. I don't think she's very good in this at all. But she's a pretty girl who we put on the poster to make it look a little bit sexy. Yeah. To get a little bit more.
Yeah, this was not her finest
role. Razzle dazzle onto it. I think this is so art imitates life.
Hey, Londoner person. Christian Bale's accent.
All of England is London, isn't it?
I actually have no idea. Where are you?
Oh, this looks like American stereotypes for 200 hours.
It's only beginning. It's only beginning.
An hour and a half away from London on the train. So, yeah, compared to America, yeah, it probably feels like London's right on my doorstep.
That's just one end of LA to another.
Yeah.
I found Christian Bale's accent irritating. Thoughts?
I'm trying to think, is Bale, where's Bale from? Is he American?
I think he's British, but he's
Welsh.
Oh, is he Welsh?
Yeah.
But he's putting on an accent.
Oh.
He's a good at his accents, though, truly. He puts time and effort into his accents. He's like Meryl Streep.
Yeah, I'm okay with his accent.
No, it sounded like Dick Van Dyke.
Get out.
Well, he is playing like Commodore London turn of the century.
It's the Jolly Holiday with Mary.
He's not like a chimney sweep or anything like that. You know, he's not stepping in time.
He's stepping in time. That's what I'm thinking.
Step in time. Like, you know, you get some of those guys popping it out of those chimneys. I mean, that was the original Transported Man, was that scene.
I want to see that mashup.
Hell yes, I do. Shit. Now you mention it. God damn it.
Fantastic.
Any other things you guys want to talk about in the plot of The Prestige?
We knew that Wolverine was bad the minute he sent Scarlett Johansson off. That's when he had no soul. He doesn't give a shit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd argue she's much like Michael Caine. She's another character that says, here's how you should feel about the characters. Because when she turns on Hugh Jackman, we go, oh, Hugh's crossing the line. And then when she turns on Christian Bale, we go, oh, he's just as bad as the two of them deserve.
Yeah,
it's kind of, we're left with no redeeming characters here. Until it does a hard
And
right
she's really more the bellwether than Michael Caine, because she sees it immediately.
Well, and you realize in the course of the movie that she's really the one who spills all the beans. She's the one who tells Christian Bale about Root, about the actor. And she's the, so clearly that means that she's like assisting him.
Yeah.
In that, the scene where Hugh Jackman's doing his trick and then Christian Bale comes out the door and there's Root hanging. You know, that was all facilitated because that's all show. Okay. That's all showmanship.
Yeah.
She has no allegiance to him once he sends her over.
Right. That was it. Boom.
That's what you get.
Something I think that's just brilliant about the plot of this is from minute one, they tell us what the twist is. He uses a double.
Yeah, that the beginning.
Minute one. And then Scarlett Johansson comes and says, I've seen makeup. I don't know when, but it's clearly a double. And the whole time we've got Fallon is just hanging out and we don't consider it for a, and they're not afraid to give us a close up. They're not afraid. And we never go, why doesn't Fallon speak? We never worry about that. We're like, you know, and the whole time we're like, Christian Bale is acting like two different guys. He's super sweet to his wife. Then he's a dick. And you're like, but we never go, oh yeah, he's fine.
Right. No.
We never consider it. And they give us so many clues all the way through. And that way, when it pulls off, it's just like they say, the minute you know, you go, oh, it's so simple.
Right.
But the joy of it is you wouldn't sit someone down to watch it and go, by the way, they're the same guy. Because then the movie's nowhere near the experience it is.
Right.
So watching it's why people become evangelical about showing people this movie.
Right.
Watching someone else watch it for the first time is the closest that you'll get to that original hit. Watching someone else's mind get blown. You have to do it like third-handedly and just sit there and watch them. And that's brilliant. And it's a small taste of that joy, because once you know the trick, you can't forget it. And it loses, pardon the pun, a little bit of its magic.
But then the worst feeling is when they turn to you at the end and go, it's all right.
Oh, yeah.
And
you're like, I've been lucky that no one's done that to me.
I thought Edward Norton was in this.
It's not as good as that Edward Norton film, though.
You know, of course I've seen it many times. So this time I'm staring at Fallon and it really doesn't look like Christian Bale.
Right.
It's like I'm staring, I'm trying to analyze it. They do such a good job. I mean,
he never speaks.
Well, never speaks.
He's and always
the face shape is different.
When they find out they're pregnant, they go, we should have told Fallon. They've just met Fallon. Like, she's just met. Like, why would we tell Fallon?
Yeah.
But, like, the hand's being tipped all movie long, so much so that when Rebecca Hall has her big last scene, she says to him, I know what you are. And she wasn't supposed to say that. She ad-libbed that and was afraid that she, like, ruined the movie. I imagine they were like, let me show you the rest of the script. We've been saying it's a double the whole movie. Like, don't worry yourself. You're just one more voice screaming that we've been taught by Angier to ignore. Because we're with him, so of course, no, it's not that simple. I've seen it.
Well, and frankly, the marriage is so heartbreaking. It is. I mean, she's constantly, he'll say, I love you. He's like, no, you don't love me today. I know some days you don't love me.
Oh.
And initially she's like, it makes the days when you do that much better. But then eventually.
It makes the days you don't that much worse.
Right.
Yeah. They're home alone. Why couldn't it just be her husband?
Right. That's what I kept wondering.
We watch that scene with the Chinese magician, and he goes, "This is what it means to do." And so I think it's some weird tortured artist stuff where he's like, "You have to do this. This is what you have to do."
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Good grief. Oof. Now, one thing I noticed at the very beginning of the movie is you hear Kristen Bale's voice. Like, I think it's like credits are barely rolling or whatever. And he says, you know, pay attention to everything.
Are you watching closely?
Are you watching? That's what it was. Are you watching closely? It's like letting you know.
Yeah.
The magic, you better be paying attention.
And the whole thing, the whole magic act is just a metaphor for the art of filmmaking. It's just act one, act two, act three, right?
Right.
So it's Christopher Nolan getting very meta, which is why I love Nolan, because I'm a film teacher during the day and I'm a little bit of a film nerd in general. And so, you know, narrative structure, this is my jam. So. But you know, you get that, and then you get, you know, the whole bit with Michael Caine, who basically says, here's the film you're going to watch. You know, we're going to have something, we're going to take it away, and we're going to give it back. And so much of it, the opening shot is those hats. And we were like, why is there a bunch of top hats? Don't worry about it for an hour and a half. We'll come back to
right.
it.
Right.
And then it's the scene, and the scene we actually see is the scene that's going to end the movie where, you know, the kid gets reconciled with either her dad or her uncle. DNA test on Maury, still to be determined, right? You are the father.
You are not the father.
But, you know, so we get that little, and we just think it's all nothing. And then the idea of birds and killing one and bringing one, the metaphor just works perfectly the whole way through. Even the bit where Fallon, who gets his one line of dialogue in the movie Christian Bale, whatever his character's name was called again, Borden, is being taken away to go to the gallows, and he throws the ball at him and he picks it up. And I think he says, poor boy, which is the same thing that he says to the bird that he throws in the bin at the start of the movie when he's killed one and puts one away. So a dead brother. And if you look, he's got a padded glove.
I had to stop it three times.
There.
I couldn't figure out what he said.
It's so hiding in plain sight, which I love this for, because that's what magic is. If as soon as you know, you see it.
Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. But that's what they say. You don't want to see it, though. It's like you want to be mystified. Right.
That's why the magic's in sort of sitting there going, let me have this moment. I hate the movies where someone ruined it for me early by giving away the twist.
Mm-hmm.
And so just let me live in, that's what, you know, filmmaking as a form of magic. It takes you away to a place. And if when those few moments where a twist is executed really, really well and it blows your brain up for a moment. Oh, those are tremendous.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Any last thoughts?
My only complaint is back at Tesla's, no one noticed 5 feet from the front door, 55,000 top hats and black cats running free.
You don't know that's where it was, Aaron.
They went for a walk, and they took about 6 steps, and then there was 10,000 decomposing black cats.
Well, you did need 2 cats in order to make the fight to draw your attention to it, so it's somewhere slightly off. It's got one of my best lines in it. Exact science is not always an exact science. It's a nice line.
And then did Edison, when he burned everything down, also burn down the 1,000 black cats?
Good question. Yeah. See, these are important questions.
These are important questions.
I don't know how much it costs to run that machine, but it seems like you've got yourself a nice little business project there. You could open a hat shop.
Put a gold bar in there.
Here we go.
Boom.
It seems like that's an awful lot of electricity in these some crazy slum where it looks like everybody's still using gas lights.
That's a fair question. I didn't think about that.
That's an they have a little nuclear reactor in the back too, or
you can't run that on coal, right? As far as we know, that's fair. I didn't think about that. Good grief. Why don't we go behind the scenes?
Excellent.
You guys ready?
Why not?
Let's see. You talked about this briefly. Chung Ling Su was a stage character created by William Ellsworth Robinson, a white man who disguised himself as a Chinese man to cash in on audiences' enthusiasm for the exotic. So that character was based upon a real historical magician. So We didn't even talk about this. What does prestige mean? In a trick, and there are all these terms for it, you show the thing, then you make it disappear, but that's not interesting, making the thing disappear. What's interesting is what they call the prestige is when you bring the thing back. That's when the cheers occur and all that stuff. The word prestige originally meant a trick, and it's from the Latin prestidigium, meaning illusion.
Or prestidigitation.
There you
go.
Magic,
magic.
Nikola Tesla was a world-renowned inventor, physicist, engineer, and for a while he conducted electrical experiments in his lab in Colorado Springs, where he's known as for his eccentric behavior.
So alternating current versus Edison's direct current.
Mm-hmm. It was a big issue, that AC versus DC. People were very concerned about it.
A side note.
Please.
What are people's thoughts on Bowie? I was really I've always been underwhelmed at Bowie's performance in this movie.
It was not one of his better performances. It was very flat.
Like I didn't want him to have like this giant like 80s hairstyle and steal a baby or anything like that. But I did want him to try a bit.
What baby?
It was not the hunger, I'll tell you that.
That is true. You know what, though? I thought it kind of worked with the character. You know what I mean? He didn't have to be Gareth the Goblin King. You know what I mean?
Honestly, his assistant was more animated than him.
Apparently Nolan phoned him up and said, only you could play this role. And then you watch it and you're like, really? Like, a lot of guys could have played this role.
Hobo
this
is Joe,
more
yeah.
Just to go, hey, look, we got David Bowie in our movie. That's why that exists.
100%. And David Bowie does not seem enthused at all. Maybe his worst performance in a film.
Fair enough.
It's just
fair
boring. Enough. Yeah, that could have been Hobo Joe.
Did you see Ricky Jay, who plays a magician in the beginning of this movie? He's an actual magician and an actor. So there you go. He was.
Yeah, he's the one who's the lead guy when Piper Perabo dies.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And the disappearing cage trick was a real trick that was used by Harry Blackstone Senior and his son Harry Blackstone Jr. So that was real. Although it seemed kind of like disgusting. You had to crank it in the back, and that was very elaborate. That was like,
oh, that one's real, or the other one? I thought it was just when you crush the bird.
No, the where you do it in plain sight. That was a real trick, evidently.
Wow.
So, but it did seem a little dangerous, to be honest. The fact that it's like
right.
Pneumatics, witches, and things.
Yeah, you lose. You got to be out of a couple of distinct sight lines to avoid getting sliced up.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like the Saw movie or something.
It's the Saw of the 1800s.
It was the based upon the events of the Prestige. Absolutely. Let's talk about the cast and crew, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this was directed by Christopher Nolan. You know him for such things as Tenet, Inception, Interstellar, Dunkirk. The list goes on and on and on. I love Memento.
Oh, come on. We got to give some love to the film that might be winning all the Oscars in a week. Oppenheimer?
Oppenheimer. Absolutely. No question.
Didn't see it.
Good stuff. I mean, not as impressed with Interstellar, if I'm being honest.
I've never seen Interstellar, so spoilers on that for me, because I definitely do want to see it.
Let's see. Cast. Christian Bale played Alfred Borden. You know him from such things as The Dark Knight, Batman Begins, American Psycho, The Fighter. The list goes on and on and on. All sorts of good stuff.
I
remember him in Newsies.
100 years in ago. Santa Fe, are you there? I swear, he hated every moment. No one told him it was going to be a musical as well, I believe. And you can see with every moment he's on screen how much he hates being there.
Right.
That's fantastic.
Well, he was in Empire of the Sun.
Amazing in Empire of the Sun.
Yeah.
But speaking of musicals, he did sing all throughout American Psycho, so he must not be that opposed.
Absolutely.
What's different one is Huey Lewis.
Hugh Jackman. You know him from such things as Les Miserables. He played Jean Valjean. He was in Logan. He was in X-Men, and for some reason, he was also in X-Men Origins Wolverine. If you haven't seen that, continue not saying it.
I missed that one.
That's not a good one.
But the Super Bowl told me he might be coming back to hang out with his buddy Ryan Reynolds and do the Wolverine thing one more time. One day more, you might say.
One day more. Yeah, no question. I can't wait for that. I think it'll be great. Good stuff.
It's some sort of style, like the most viewed trailer of all time or something like that. Like, it's just the hype has been through the roof.
Well, they have kind of a bromance in real life.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. They're constantly talking to each other on social media and all sorts of good stuff. Let's see. Scarlett Johansson played Olivia Wenscombe, the, what is she? The helper? What are they called?
Assistant.
The magician's assistant. Thank you. You know her from Lost in Translation.
Which is the best film ever.
She was in Her.
That's her finest role at 19.
She was in
Avengers. We just reviewed her last week, actually. What a voice acting performance that was. I'm not usually one who's down voice acting. Fantastic.
Why did they replace Samantha Morton? Do you know the reason?
They replaced Samantha Morton. Whatever was supposed to happen just didn't click. Now, we did, in our review, we found out that Spike Jonze, the director, kept Morton and Joaquin Phoenix apart as a way to, I guess, try and, you know, art imitates life, method, all that stuff. When actually, maybe the answer was to do the opposite and let them actually hang out a bit and get a little bit of chemistry, because it needs to feel like they're connecting. So apparently just whatever he was looking for story perspective, it didn't come out. Now, he didn't just bring her back for reshoots. Instead, he recasts with Scarlett and redoes everything and calls Joaquin back for a bit. And their chemistry, despite obviously never appearing on screen together, is tremendous.
That's done. Well, it's kind of like what they did in Back to the Future, where they filmed half the movie with Eric Stoltz.
Yeah.
And we're like, this ain't working. Bye-bye. And then they had to recast the girlfriend, too, because she would be too tall for Michael J. Fox. So,
because tall girls never date short boys.
But it's a different actress in movie two because her mom gets sick. So they put Elizabeth Shue in instead. Yeah.
And a different Crispin Glover in two as well. A false Crispin Glover. Yeah,
there was a giant lawsuit about that one because they basically use his likeness. And
they did.
They try to trick you into going, he's upside down, but it's the same guy. And no, it's not.
Well, they put prosthetics on his face to make him look like Crispin Glover. So bizarre. So bizarre. She was also in Under the Skin, by the way. And Michael Caine played Cutter, the ingénieur.
Yes.
Which I guess just means engineer in French.
It's a little turn of the century. They were called ingénieurs, I'll have you know.
Ingénues.
Ingénues.
He was in The Dark Knight, Youth, Cider House Rules, The Prestige. I could go on and on.
His filmography. How much time you got? Because we'll be here a while.
We'll be here all the live long day. He was in Blame It on Rio.
Blame It on Rio. I think I saw that on a plane once.
He was in The Hand.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh, yeah. I love Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
That's a classic.
I love Michael Caine. I follow him on Twitter. He doesn't post
We're
much.
Pro Michael Caine.
Michael Caine is he's a national treasure. He's retired now at the age of 90-something. But, man, what a – the thing about when he started acting, you know, 70 years ago. What's that?
Absolutely. That's
1954. Like, just think how much movies have changed in the 70 years he's been on screen.
Totally.
Tremendous.
Totally.
Tremendous.
No, I love him because he does, like, fine films, and then he'll do The Swarm. You know what I mean? He's down for whatever. He's like, write me a check. I'm there. Jaws the Revenge. I'm there. Whatever you need.
What is this Kingsman film? Yeah, all right.
Sure.
Now he's you like, see I me, did... if the paycheck's there, you will.
He says, Jaws the Revenge, did not like the movie, but I like the beach house it bought.
Yes.
Yeah.
No shame in his game, and God bless him. Rebecca Hall, who we haven't really talked about much.
Tremendously underrated in this film. Like she, with all the big name stars, people sleep on her. She's tremendous here.
She's great. Yeah. She is arguably like the emotional center of this film.
Yeah. She's the only one with emotion.
There you go. You know her from Vicky Cristina Barcelona. She was in The Town.
She's great in The Town.
She was in The Prestige. She was in 2016's Christine, which I don't think has anything to do with Stephen King.
Oh, damn it. I was like, what?
I had to guess. let's see. David Bowie played Tesla. You know him from such things as
being David Bowie.
He was in Labyrinth. He was in The Man Who Fell to Earth in 1976. The Prestige, Zoolander.
I was a little bored with that, by the way.
Oh, that tough role in Zoolander where he plays himself, yes.
it's hard. It's hard. And we've got, of course, Andy Serkis, who is actually an actor. For years, I thought he was just kind of a motion capture guy. But he's in stuff where he's doing no weird golem stuff. So, I'm going to list. Go ahead.
Did you see him in Black Panther? I mean, the guy is ripped. The guy is.
He is.
All you guys making fun of me for being Gollum, I'm going to use all that as fuel, as rage in the gym. He is.
Now, that being said, as being a physical actor, he's known for War of the Planet of the Apes, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes,
Breakfast with Planet of the Apes.
You know what? Those movies are actually pretty good. And I thought the first one, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, was like borderline like great. Frankly.
No, it's outstanding. Like, yeah. If it had gotten some Oscar buzz, I wouldn't have challenged it. It was tremendous.
Real performances from like the actors that aren't just not just the monkeys and the chimps or whatever, but like
Franco. Yeah.
So there you have it. Let's talk about the rating, shall we? The Prestige currently has 77% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Interesting.
Do you know what the audience gave it?
What? 52%.
It's 90 something, isn't it?
92.
Yeah.
92. Yeah. Good stuff.
Got a C. The
word of mouth on this film was insane for years. Yep. I was part of a message board that talked all things, but The Prestige as a movie came up and it just never left the screen. People were talking about it for like 2-3 years straight. People were coming in and sharing the word of mouth. It's one of those that, because they have a big splashy marketing budget. So it really depended on that. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Roger Ebert says it's quite a movie. Atmospheric, obsessive, almost satanic. 3 out of 4. Good stuff. And let's see. We've got Peter Travers from Rolling Stone. There are nifty tricks galore up the sumptuous sleeve of this offbeat. Of this offbeat and wildly entertaining thriller. 3.5 out of 4, Peter Travers. Not bad.
It sounds like he wrote that in the 1950s. Maybe he's a time traveler.
That's what I would expect from Peter Travers.
I was watching a thing where they said, these are not tricks. These are illusions. Tricks are things whores do for money and candy. So write that down.
That's from Arrested Development.
It is.
That's Job. Oh, Dad, you don't have time for my illusions.
Rex Reed.
All right.
Our patron saint. The movie is more infuriating and contrived than suspenseful and clever. Thank you for that, Rex Reed.
Rex Reed.
What, what is your rating? Let's start with you, Aaron.
I am actually going to give it, 4 out of 5. I like Christian Bale better than Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman, fuck off. How about that? Four out of five. How about that?
That's serious. Ian, what do you got?
Ah, it's a stone cold 5-star classic for me.
Boom!
I like films that I walk away and I have to carry them with me for a bit, whether it's positive or negative, it is, but that I mull it over and the themes resonate and that you can, not that it has to, but that you can come back and rewatch and get something different because, you only get one first watch, but does it hold up on second watch, on third watch? And the film does. I mean, outside of a little bit of, hey, Hugh Jackman, why don't you just, make a deal with yourself and not kill yourself in a water tank. Outside of bits like this, I mean, the film totally holds up, and you sit there, and every time I watch it, I find something else out where they were showing me what the twist was,
Yeah.
A twist that when you rewatch, the twist holds up. When you show it to someone else, you get that sort of enjoyment there. The acting's fantastic. The scope is fantastic. And I just love people who mess with narrative structure and play with audience's expectations. And this does all those things. So for me, yeah, it's an absolute 5-star classic.
Absolutely.
And the end is still haunting.
Oh, yeah.
It is. I mean, you got all those damn corpses.
What are you going to get rid of all that? Even if you burn that, they're giant tanks of glass and water. I mean, there's still going to be evidence.
That's true. But how could they ever explain there are 100 identical corpses?
This is one of those movies you'd love to get, like, what would happen the day after.
Yes.
Yes. That'll be the Prestige part two, where they recast it with all lesser actors.
With lesser actors. And Scarlett Johansson.
And Scarlett Johansson. She's got time.
What was interesting is when Michael Caine is talking to the judge, and the judge like, if you just show me the trick privately, would that be acceptable? I'm like, how are they going to explain this trick? And he just says, it's real. It's all real. It's not a trick at all. So I guess that's one way to do it.
Yeah.
So... good grief. Yeah. I'm going to give it I think I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5 as well. I thought, really, I don't have a lot of complaints, but I find myself not watching it often. You know what I mean? I think once you get to like the 4.5 and the 5s, you're in my rotation. You know what I mean? Of kind of my guilty pleasures or my not so guilty pleasures.
Rosemary's Baby, The Shining.
Okay. I was thinking like Tango and Cash, but yes.
Tango and Cash.
Sweet Jesus. So I would definitely recommend, if you haven't seen it, I mean, is it still worth seeing since we've told you all the secrets?
It's worth it. It's still worth it, even if you know everything.
Absolutely.
I mean, they tell you everything at the beginning, so pretty much.
Well, and sometimes, you know, when the trick is revealed, or the twist or whatever is revealed, if you go back and watch like the steps they took, the steps don't always make sense in these other films. But in this one, the seeds are planted, like you said, throughout. It is consistent. There's no, you know, bizarre twists that make no sense or only trying to trick the audience.
It's not like Ocean's 12 where you go, hang on a minute. Once you know you're going, you actually go, hang on a moment. No. It doesn't do that.
Right.
There is an evil twin borrowed from every soap opera. An evil twin always appears.
And just like in Ocean's 12, where Tess is for some reason an exact duplicate of Julia Roberts.
Of us don't exist in that movie universe.
That's correct.
Like George Clooney, you don't look like Brad Pitt. Just Tess looks like Julia Roberts.
Right. Oh, God. I really, since we're going off on this jag for 5 hours, Ocean's 11, dynamite. Love Ocean's 11.
Love it.
Ocean's 12, I thought it was too self-referential. It was too much, look how much fun we're having, high five. You know what I mean? It's like what you and your buddies would film over a drunken weekend, and then you show it to somebody else. They're like, thanks, but no thanks.
It's like when I was drunk and I watched Pool Boy and I thought that was like the funniest thing I ever saw. And then I recommended it to someone and I watched it with them. I was like, oh shit.
Right.
Something was wrong with me. But isn't the whole thing with Ocean's 12 that they like already had it from the start of the movie anyway? The thing they were trying to get, they'd already captured way before, and everything else was like a pantomime. And that could be a fun twist. The problem is, the danger is you tell the audience that thing you were invested in. Yeah, you didn't need to hear an idiot for investing in that. We'd already taken care of it like an hour ago.
Right.
And as a result, you go, no, you know what? Screw you, movie. Yeah, you had your moment, but I'm not coming back again. Oh, even this made me feel like I wasted my time. That is not an enjoyable effect for me. As opposed to Ocean's 11, where I went, oh, this is such a fun twist at the end. What a great sort of reveal. Oh, let's watch. Oh, it's brilliant. Let's watch that again. No, this was the opposite. So I never watched 13.
13 was better. Clearly, it wasn't as good as the. Now, I'm not talking about the first one like it was Oppenheimer or something. It was, you know, it was fun. It's
the first
a fun
one was a
film.
Great cinema experience. Yes. It was a fun movie. Yeah,
it was fun.
I never saw any of them.
Oh, the first one's really good. And, again, and I had low expectations. It came out going that was great.
That's the secret. I think the first one is the movie where I really started to go, hey, I kind of like Brad Pitt, where I didn't up to that point. You know, I thought he was kind of not that great of an actor. And then he kind of discovered, how can I be just kind of charming on screen that people enjoy me?
Hey, hand me that piece of fruit. I'm going to always be eating something, I've decided.
That's what it was. It was those choices.
I will say he did make an arc, because I always hated Brad Pitt.
In the 90s.
In the 90s. Right. And then I'm starting to warm up to him. I always Clooney thought he looked like he movie. Smelled, and he was a shitty actor. He was a Costner for a long time.
I like Clooney or Pitt, and that movie turned me on both of them, and it introduced me to Matt Damon. Oh, it's that movie's huge.
Well, it's like, you know what? If you're not the finest actor in the world, you can still learn to be kind of interesting to watch, where you're just kind of playing yourself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's okay. If that's your thing, I can appreciate that. I can enjoy that. You know what I mean?
Channing Tatum, you go make those movies, buddy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love Channing Tatum.
But you don't want Channing Tatum to play Oppenheimer.
No.
Fair. Fair. Sweet Lord.
Keanu Reeves is Oppenheimer.
Well, then that
now I might sign up for that. I might roll in for that.
Well, it's like that
can't be worse than Dracula.
In the 90s, you had Keanu doing like Shakespeare.
You know? Shakespeare. Yeah. Much to do about nothing. It was like, oh, it was dreadful.
What are we thinking? What are we doing with our lives?
I mean, Kenneth Branagh on the downslide.
Oh, sweet Lord.
Nobody gave a shit anymore.
I have
anymore.
To cast who to make get this movie made. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Everybody's had enough of your movie. Bullshit. Right.
But the same thing
sucked.
As the 2000s approached, Keanu, I don't know what happened. Now he's more kind of, okay, I appreciate what you're doing now.
You yes, know? I agree.
Something happened.
He knows who he is.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
He knows absolutely. Who he is. I hated him for years, but Constantine, that's where I changed my mind.
I also think about like, this is obviously to a lesser extent, but like Vince Vaughn. When Vince Vaughn first appeared in Swingers, we love Vince Vaughn.
Yes.
And then for 5 years, he's like, I'm going to show people I'm more than that. And people are like, Psycho? We don't want that. Go Nobody back and be that. Vince Vaughn again.
Yeah, 100%.
So. Anyway.
You're reaching too far, Vince. Get back to where you know. Go
That's
on.
That's what I'm saying. So, thank you very much. Go to our pages across social media. We're on X, I guess, Blue Sky, Threads. We're on TikTok, Instagram. You may be watching this on YouTube, for goodness sake. You can also email us at thepodcast@gmail.com. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere the finer podcasts are available. So don't forget to like, share, rate, and review. Won't
See, that's
you?
Where you're missing out. Because Best Film Ever is on all the ones you find the degenerates. Not just the fine
4chan.
We're out there. Oh, with like, we have like the real questionable ones too. So like.
Parlay.
What is it? Chat roulette.
Chat roulette.
Aaron, where can people find your interesting musings?
I looked and I'm still on Artsy and First Dibs, Aaron Doherty. And then, you know, I'm the cult of Aaron. Join the cult on the Insta. I'm Don't Feed the Pigeon on the Insta. And then I'm on the Twitter and the Threads and whatnot. I'm not on Blue Sky. I can barely maintain the media that I'm supposed to maintain.
I may be the one on Blue Sky. So yeah. Drop in.
You and four are your friends.
That's right. Now, Ian, tell us about your show and where can we find it?
Hey, we're Best Film Ever. We're me and a cornucopia of my friends from various walks of life. Get around and see if we can decide in all our disparate ways on what exactly is the best film ever. We tend to drop new releases on a Tuesday. We usually have some bonus stuff throughout the week, but you can get a hold of us. Like I said, you can find us wherever degenerate podcasts are found. You can keep track of us on what used to be called on the platform formerly known as Twitter, at Best Film Ever Pod. Technically, we do have an Instagram. It's hardly ever updated. I don't even know what Blue Sky is, but you can generally hit all of us at Best Film Ever Pod. If you like what we do, why not check out the Patreon? Help keep the lights on. It's patreon.com/BFE. we kept it simple for you.
Absolutely. And we actually first met because you had like quiz nights that we would do. And that was hilarious and fun.
Yeah, I'd like to say that we still do those. It's a bit. We had a defending champion who then like disappeared, so I kind of just dropped for a bit. We always got some sort of fun sort of side thing going on, whether it's ridiculous stuff like fantasy football or just getting together with a bunch of film podcasts and talking about the summer preview. I'm trying to get peeps around for an Oscar preview show. So always. Always ideas coming at. Just take a look at the feed and you'll be surprised what's coming down the pipe next.
Absolutely. We'll put all your links in our show notes as well. What we like to do is include questions and comments from our friends across the interweb talking about the movie Chopping Mall. Our friends on TikTok. Dale Minis 456 says, love this movie. Okay, there's one. Good times. Nano says, reminded me of Deadly Friend, which I remember with Christy Swanson 100 years ago. You guys remember Deadly Friend?
Never heard of it.
Shane LaCasa says, if Kit from Knight Rider and R2-D2 had a child, that's what
with a bloodlust.
Absolutely with a bloodlust. So, good times. Thank you.
I just want to share that is our most watched video on TikTok. It has over 18,000 views, and now TikTok is refusing to release it onto For Your Page because of the violence. I just went through, and like half of our best performing videos are now like not for your page because we're being blocked.
Well, the sad thing about talking about horror and sci-fi is there's often violence involved. So imagine I apologize that. To all the children who are scarred.
On our TikTok.
You shouldn't be on TikTok anyway, kids. That's my opinion. Anyway, except if you're watching our stuff. Then it's okay. Next week, we're discussing the horror science fiction classic, Species, starring Natasha Henstridge, Ben Kingsley. We've got Forrest Whitaker, Alfred Molina, Michael Madsen, Marg Helgenberger. It is literally an all-star cast. And I watched it recently, and I'm bowled over by the sheer amount of nudity. For the 90s, it is shocking.
It's an 80s hangover.
70s into the 80s. Look, boobs, we were going to see them. That's how it worked in that time period.
You couldn't make a film in the 80s without a naked woman somewhere.
You couldn't. I mean, they would make movies just for that purpose. But it's seemingly like by the 90s, we kind of started to chill a little bit. Like, okay, you know, been there, done that. Not so much with Species. So check that out. you can watch it on Max with a subscription. So that'll be good. And send in your favorite scenes, favorite quotes, comments, and questions. And maybe we'll talk about it on the show.
So there's going to be topless. There's going to be topless women on an HBO channel. You're saying,
shocking!
Wow,
shocking! It's not Red Shoe Diaries or anything, but you know, you do what you got to do. I guess in the 90s, yeah,
they've changed HBO's name for about 12 times in the last year and a half. Yes. So now I'm going with Max, which reminds me of Cinemax, which of course is Skinemax.
Yeah. Absolutely, no question. Why else would you subscribe
get Max
to Cinemax
in the UK?
So
we're left to alternate means to find all our HBO properties.
Whatever that might be. Yeah, I don't know why they keep rebranding themselves every 15 minutes.
It's upsetting to us all.
I said it's on HBO, and people are like, I don't have HBO. I have something called Max. I'm like, come on.
Come on. For God's sakes. So
be aware. Be part of the universe, you know? Check out.
Be a part of the universe, would you? And watch Species. So thank you very much. Thank you again, Ian, for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. I had a great time.
Yeah, it was good times. And be well.
Bye, people.